Well, hello there, and welcome to the AFA podcast, the official podcast of animationforadults.com. This is episode 88, and I am Chris, and I'm joined this week by Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Chris. Hi. How you doing? How you doing, man?
I am doing just fine. I'm pleased to be here talking about animation, as always.
Me too, man.
And this week, we are going to be, a bit later, we're going to be talking about the movie Napping Princess, also known as Ancien and the Magic Tablet in some places, or some screenings it did, which has been released in the US by G-Kids and released in the UK by Anime Limited, and has had some limited cinema screenings in both places, and is now going to be part of the slate going, the potential slate for entering, well, for the for consideration for this, the award season coming up, because G-Kids have got a whole slew of very promising movies coming up like that, and
yeah, but they're getting a bit big for their boots, aren't they, with the Oscars?
Well, they've got a big list to whittle it down. Obviously, not all of them are going to make it.
I'm being kind of facetious because of the whole, hey, let the massive, you know, American CG features have a chance for once.
Yeah, who's going to look out for Boss Baby? Eh, poor Boss Baby doesn't stand a chance without changing the rules.
I think my friend Owen might be. He loves that movie. I tried watching it on the plane.
Oh.
And I lasted about 15 minutes.
That's good.
I know.
That doesn't sound good.
I was tired, but you know, I want to give it another shot.
Yeah, I will have to give it a go. Tell you what was really good though, Storks, which I watched the other week. Talked about on the last show was one of the surprising.
Oh, really?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I still have to find. I think that's on Sky Movies. I think I'll check that out. There, I'm definitely interested in that because one of the directors I think directed one of my favorite ever Pixar shorts, Presto.
Ah, and also the script is written by Nicholas Stoller, who wrote the recent Muppet movies. So.
Right. Okay.
And yeah,
sounds like a good.
I thought it was very pleasing and very surprising, and I recommend it. So, yes. So that's what's going to be our main topic. But before that, we will talk about some news. We should probably just mention the fact that this week we are trying a different recording method. So if it sounds any different.
We are in the bath. Better acoustics.
No, it's not. That's not it. We are using a different recording program, and hopefully it's all going to go okay. Touch wood. We have had a few teething problems, but let us know if it sounds better or whatever. So, news to start off with. There was a bit of news relating to one of the most popular anime films of recent times, which is Your Name, is going to get a live-action adaptation already, which caused a lot of chatter online, I think it's fair to say. And it's the rights have been brought by J.J. Abrams and Bad Robot to make for Paramount. I think a lot of people were talking as if J.J. Abrams was going to direct it, but that hasn't. It's unlikely, I would say. He's a bit busy with a little movie called Star Wars Episode 9. Yeah, that he's just signed on for.
I heard Colin Trevorrow isn't that busy anymore.
Yeah, he could direct Your Name instead.
I want to say, like, this is the sort of thing which is probably only getting like reported because it was a really, 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 really successful movie. this sort of thing happens all the time, like rights being picked up and books being optioned, and you know, I'm not massively confident that it will actually happen. I don't, not least because one of the biggest thematic elements of the film kind of relies pretty heavily on Japanese history, certainly recent Japanese history. So, yeah, I don't know. It could work. It could work as a body swap thing, but the thing that, you know, made it interesting was the fact that it was a two Japanese. Yeah,
well, that's the thing. You know, it's kind of the setup isn't anything unusual. I mean, I still haven't seen it, but I know the basic setup, and that is something that's been done in Hollywood a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It seems strange that they would want to buy the rights to something and then kind of flatten all the edges and, you know, like what usually happens. I guess the thing that my head always goes to is that old Harry Partridge short. The American Akira. Have you seen where the guy has a talking bike and, oh no, but, the prom's tomorrow.
But have you heard the latest rumour about live action Akira? That was months ago. Latest rumour is your friend of mine, Taika Waititi. You see, it's very conflicting, isn't it?
Waititi?
Because it's like, this film shouldn't happen, but he is awesome.
You know what? I think he'd be more suited to... Yeah, the thing is, he is awesome, but he has a degree of wit which would probably go wasted on Akira. I'm thinking, like, Taika Waititi would probably be better suited for, like, Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's I don't see Taika Waititi's take on Akira really exciting me. I think, like, for Akira, I would want someone like a Denise Villeneuve. You know, I can't, I'm sorry, he's the biggest filmmaker in the world, and I can't.
Villeneuve.
Name.
Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve.
Yes. Yeah.
The Arrival Blade Runner dude, like, that would be probably more interesting. I don't know. But yeah, I saw a tweet by some Japanese person talking about the Your Name Hollywood remake, and they reimagined it to be then they sort of like wrote like a stage direction: a girl in Oklahoma and a boy in New York City. Two unrelated people wake up to find they switch bodies. And then the messages are just like, who the fuck are you, loser? C word. Like, yeah, it's... I think that's kind of... I'm, as facetious as it is, it kind of proves a point that, like, part of the charm is the fact that it is specific and Japanese and, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's set in a real place as well. So, like, the sorts of neighborhoods in the films and the sorts of neighborhoods depicted in the film have since become,
yeah,
like little hotspots. Sort of like how the area that, Whisper of the Heart was set in is sort of like, you know, a famous place now because of the film's connection. And it's, I don't know, it is more interesting. And Hollywood's recent track record of happening anime has been...
I can't believe you'd say that after the brilliance of Death Note and Ghost in the Shell. Actually, I haven't seen Ghost in the Shell, to be fair, but Death Note...
I haven't seen it. I watched someone else...
And you just watched their face in disgust.
And I didn't think I was missing out. I couldn't see their face. I wasn't sure if they were asleep or not, but... Yeah, look, it doesn't... I don't know. I don't think much will come from it, frankly. I think they'll struggle.
Speaking of Arrival, the screenwriter for the Your Name adaptation has been signed on is Eric Heisserer.
No one who wasn't that
for long. My turn now. Eric Heisserer. There seems to be too many R's and the S's in it. Sorry, Eric. You're a very talented screenwriter.
Eric Heisserer?
Of an Oscar nominated. Yes, that'll do. He's a screenwriter.
Really? Well, you know, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really good screenwriter, and he understands genre really well, and he puts in the work. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, I genuinely would be very surprised if the film ever got made. But there we go.
Obviously, this has already generated people saying, are they going to whitewash it or whatever? And it's kind of a thing because you'd think they probably will adapt it for America, which
right
many people
in a way it would be will. Lamer if it was like set in Los Angeles, Koreatown or something, wouldn't it? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I think the whole like whitewashing thing makes me feel. It's a really, 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 really complicated issue. And I think you have to ask yourself whether the property itself hinges on the race of the characters being depicted. But then you also like enter into, okay, in terms of like our own multicultural society, you know, is everyone being represented on the screen? So, you know, it could easily work as like an African American story.
Yeah.
But it's, I felt the same thing actually about the death. I got very confused, I should say, about the Death Note thing. It's like, well, the whole point is that it's being Americanized and would it really, I think people probably get more pissed off if it was, you know, Asian Americans, you know, play. It's just a weird all round feeling for me.
Yeah, it's
gotta say.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to talk about.
And I'm not saying it feels. I'm not saying it works great either when you know, you have a Ghost in the Shell situation or a Death Note one. But yeah, it's my main thing is just the fact that. It's such a specific story.
Wow, great game, Yamagata. That was a sweet home run.
What can I say? Sports are my anti-drug.
No time to talk, guys. Evil scientists and wrinkly children in flying chairs are holding our friend Tetsuo captive and performing experiments on him. And the prom's tomorrow. Now we're gonna go and show those douchebags they can't mess with us. Or my name isn't Kaneda. Washington, Sawyer, Finn, Bush, Cheney, Pamela, Anderson, Lee.
True dat, yo. True dat, y'all indeed, inevitable black gang member. We're with you, Kaneda. Now let's ride our bike safely under the speed limit straight there.
Are you ready, talking bike?
I was born ready, Kaneda.
Let's ride. And somehow... I had a feeling things were gonna turn out all right.
We've been on the run, driving in the sun, looking out for number one. California, here we come, right back where we started from. Oh, hustles, grab your gun.
So whether Your Name, the Hollywood adaptation, will actually happen or not, and in what form, who knows? We shall have to wait to see. But of course, the anime community is delighted with the news, as you can imagine. They're going, Hollywood's so creatively bankrupt. And I think it's quite funny because it's not like anime is not a business or anything, or that there isn't anything. They don't have certain trends of their own, though. But we shall see how that turns out. Moving on to some other news. More movie news, but this time animated. We got the surprising news that Bob's Burgers is going to be getting its own movie in 2020, which was kind of news out of nowhere that caught a lot of people by surprise. Especially when you think The Simpsons, how long did it take that to get a movie? About 20 years. And like Family Guy hasn't ever had a movie. Well, it's had a straight to DVD one or whatever, but who cares? So, and it's not like Bob Burgers is like a huge, it's popular, but it's not like a massive cultural phenomenon or anything. So,
Joe, you know, I think it slowly became that.
Yeah.
I think it slowly, yeah, wriggled its way into people's hearts and minds, and it is pretty big.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty consistent, and I don't know. And I also want to say, like, I don't know if the Simpsons movie taking some 20, however many years it took, was down to Fox holding things up.
More down to
they probably wanted a movie like after second season. It was probably more down to the Simpson powers that be.
Yeah, that's fair.
No, I'm down with this because it's Bob's Burgers. Like, their specials are really good, and they're quite good at doing bigger stories. And also they've done a few like three.
Yeah,
parties, haven't they?
There was one. There was like something to do with fairground or something, carnival, whatever. There was some sort of,
It had a funny name.
It was like, something like Die Hard or something weird like that. It was.
Yeah, it was like the season two or three finale or something. But my point is that the show can kind of sustain. Bigger.
And it doesn't have to be, oh no, the world's going to end, the Belchers have to save it. It could just be slightly longer adventure type thing. Sort of in the vein of Shaun the Sheep kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh my God, I'd love that. I would love that. So, and you know, Bob's Burgers is quite creative as well. It's more creative than Family Guy ever was in terms of like concepts or how things would be I know, but it's worth saying, you know, they in terms of like concepts, they're really happy to just like try something and, you know, see what's going on. I think it was called Wolf Horse, or How Bob Saves/Destroys the Town Part 1, and the second one was called World Wolf 2: The Wharfening, or How Bob Saves/Destroys the Town Part 2. It was the season 4.
I have not seen
finale.
As much Bob's Burgers as I would like to have done.
Same. I think I tend to do the typical millennial thing and wait for a whole season to end so I can then binge it over a week or a weekend or something.
It hasn't been on Netflix for a while, so that's probably why.
That's true. That's true.
It might be on like Comedy Central or something in the UK. It's not on. It was on like E4 for a bit, and then now it's not.
Yeah, UK TV is so weird because no show is ever on the channel you expect.
Yeah.
And lots of shows nowadays just like literally aren't picked up. And it's utterly baffling. Like, I don't know. Like live action shows I'm thinking of, like Key and Peele and Nathan For You.
And aren't they like comedy?
Not on TV. It's so bizarre. And then like Bob's Burgers, like you said, used to be on Netflix, and now it's not. And anyway, this is quite surprising welcome news for once. Yeah.
Yeah. Way off still, 2020, but hey, that means Bob's Burgers should be on air till at least 2020, right?
Yeah, at least, maybe beyond.
Hopefully, beyond, yeah.
They might do a Rugrats. They might introduce like a character in the movie that then happens and that then appears in the TV show.
Oh, I thought you meant that they might cross over with, what was it? The Wild Thornberrys.
If Bob's Burgers did a Wild Thornberrys crossover,
weird.
That would be great.
Yeah. So
it would be worth it just to see Gene and Nigel Thornberry.
This is where my joke falls down because I haven't actually seen the Wild Thornberrys. It's just I was thinking, what is that crossover movie? The idea with the Rugrats, and that was it. Yeah. So that was that. Also, just we will mention that a new trailer came out for season 2 of Miraculous Ladybug, and people who like that are excited about that. Dad and I do not have much to say about it, really.
No, I wish I did. I'm just frankly not the target audience, so you know, it seems like a great show and I've seen some cool things from it, and but I don't really keep up with it.
The animation and design is really lovely, I will say that, of the show. And yeah, that kind of makes me go, oh yay, I'm glad this is doing well and it's found its audience. So, but other than that, I don't really have anything to say apart from apparently in the trailer Ladybug and Cat Noir seem to be fighting. What's going on there? I don't know. Probably mind control. But that is
probably.
Yeah, it's probably coming out. Well, it is coming out before the end of the year on Netflix in the US, season 2. And it's going to air on TV in France, I think, later this month. Because it's French / South Korean / Japanese co-production. But it's set in France and created by a French guy. So I think news-wise, that's about it for now. So let us talk about our main topic, which is the movie Napping Princess, also known as Ancien and the Magic Tablet, which is a film from the director Kenji Kamiyama. That's right? I've got to look it up now.
Yeah, that sounds
He worked on, he's known for working on Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, and also Eden of the East, the TV series. So this is one of his first forays into feature films, or one of his highest profile forays into feature films. And it is being shown in cinemas in the UK from Anime Limited and in the US from G Kids. And it is about, well, it's about a teenage girl who is in like the penultimate year of high school. And she has a bit of a habit of falling asleep, all over the place. And I, at that point, I'm thinking I've never identified with character quite as much. Just likes to nap. I can get behind that. And when she's asleep, she has these strange dreams of this magical kingdom and a princess. But it's kind of a technological kingdom, where everyone drives cars and it's called Heartland. There's a magical iPad. She lives with her dad, on her own. And, they have a bit of a tough relationship sometimes, or they don't seem to, talk very much. Yeah, this is outside the dream. And,
this is outside
of the dream. It's kind of hard to describe because it's got two sides. It's got the real world and it's got the fantasy. And you keep going between them and, you're not really sure. Is this dream somehow reality or is it a real thing that's happened, or is it just a dream or whatever? And it's also, it's in the year, of 2020, when the in the run up to the Tokyo Olympics. And I've really not done a very good job of describing the plot because it's not very easy to describe.
To be fair, it's a hard one to describe because it's quite busy and there's a lot going on, and you pretty much got it. I mean, it's sort of it does like what's the word? Like a fake out start. Like it starts as a fantasy and then you realize, oh, this is a dream. And then you're back to the familiar world of Japanese slice of life anime where, you know, everything is depicted, like food is depicted in glorious detail. And then she sort of jumps in between these two worlds. But the plot is pretty hard to break down. And I'm not wanting to like spoil it too much. It's very hard to talk about if you don't want to spoil it, but basically it ends up being a story about family.
Yeah.
Which is a very vague thing to say about a film, but it's true.
I will just start by saying I was really pleasantly surprised by this film. I thought it was really, quite a little hidden gem. Well, it's not completely hidden. Obviously, it's being released in cinemas, and not that many anime films have got the chance to be seen in cinemas till recently. So, but
it's from a veteran, but it's his first foray into kids.
Yes, yeah.
And into family entertainment.
Yeah, if you look at his back catalogue, he's. Like I said, Ghost in the Shell, Eden of the East, and the Eden of the East movie, Blood the Last Vampire, Cyborg 009. Mm-hmm. So, fairly typical sort of anime stuff. But this...
Sci-fi.
Yeah, anime. And this has got a sci-fi angle, but it's still very different. Mm-hmm. Family. It's a family film. A charming family film, but with the I like the fantasy world you get is an interesting mix of fantasy and sci-fi in a way that I haven't quite seen before. I can't think of another film that's done quite the same sort of fantasy world where it's sort of there's wizards but there's cars and it's like
kind. I'm tempted to say maybe Steam Boy. It seems like it's going for that kind of mechanical worldy, and it's a bit, I can't actually like remember which one in particular I'm thinking of, but I got like Final Fantasy vibes.
Yeah, it's not quite steampunk though, is it? It's kind of.
No. It's like if steampunk was based on everything up until the 50s, maybe.
And also, I think maybe there's a bit of a sort of from Japanese like recent history, like when they were the people who produced the most cars and things like that, because the king produces cars and everyone must drive a car, and it's a big law, and it's like. Which is a really strange thing until you realize, like the connection in the real world.
Right. Wow. They kept that pretty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't.
It kind of does the Wizard of Oz thing with the people in the real world and people in the fantasy world having an equivalent.
Yeah, I gotta say, so I'll say it now. I wasn't as much a fan of this film as you seem to be.
Fair enough. I've also heard people who didn't like it.
I really wanted to like it, but I think it's like it's very interesting that we're saying this sort of it's kind of this, it's kind of that, and I think it's kind of a lot of things, but it's not. It never really comes together into clearly or completely following through on the concepts that it sort of sets up.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of has lots of plates that are spinning and then just sort of ends. And I mean, there is kind of a story, but it's so long. I did struggle to get through it. I'll be frank about it. Nothing against like how it looks. Like, it's can't fault the animation at all. It's really, really lovely, brilliant detail, just really nicely drawn animation. And they, you know, he's trying like different sorts of shots that you're used to in like 2D anime. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't move me, and the story didn't quite grab me.
Okay. Like I said, you're not the first person I've heard reacted. I've heard other people just say they thought it was dull or whatever, and I didn't react like that at all. Maybe I'm just shallow, and I was like, this is a pretty film. I'm enjoying it. I don't know. It's really lovely to look at. If you've seen Eden of the East, it's quite visually, like the character designs and everything is quite similar to that. And it's got a sort of, I think it looks kind of flat in, if you look at it in stills, but I think when you actually see it in motion, it works really well. And you get all these sort of, like you were saying about the slice of life stuff, you get all these really beautifully animated, just everyday life, and like you just the way it portrays ordinary Japan, like sort of slightly rural Japan, sun dappled, relaxed life type thing. I think I it worked for me anyway. And I also enjoyed the fantasy world, even if it was never really clear, is that real or is that just a fancy thing? And what do you think?
I think, yeah, I mean, I really, really want to like it, but I think overall it's a bit too precise. And it's just a little bit too precise to be magical. Like, even the flight of fancy scenes, it's just like feel fine-tuned with an inch of their life, and it's not like the sort of wonky fantasy that I think dream worlds are really like. I mean, that's not my biggest problem with the film. It's just a small one though, and it's one that I think the problem is that maybe I am actually quite old fashioned and conventional in my film tastes. And it didn't really set up the rules of this dream world early on. And the trouble with that is that I spent half the time like wondering whether I was supposed to care about it or not. Like, it's hard to ask the audience to buy into stakes when they're proven, like a few times in the film, not to matter, because it goes, oh, it's a dream. And it kind of flip-flops on that, and I felt annoyed with it, because I was like, hang on, look, you've got to tell us, does the dream world matter, or does the real world matter? And if they both matter, you have to tell us they both matter. But it mattering when it's convenient for you is harder for me to you know, be along with the ride for. All of my problems with it are just purely with, like, the story and the script.
I mean, otherwise, it's fine.
It's just part of the film, to be honest.
The entire story and the script. It's, and the...
Well, again, like, I could go on. Like, I don't really... The characterization was a bit weak for me as well. Like, I couldn't tell you what the characters were like. Like the main character, I don't know. Like, she was pretty inconsistent.
Like, she was literally dumb as anything quite a few times. Like, she couldn't read, and then she couldn't, like, put quite simple things, like, two and two together, and she couldn't, like, figure out, like, how to hide from a villain, and then we're told, oh, she's really strong-headed, but the boy character who she's with literally has to show her many very simple things. And I know sometimes those are exposition conversations, like, oh, haven't you heard of the thing that I have to tell you about right now? I know some of them are like that, but she seems to, like, have no previous curiosity in her own family. So it's like, I just felt a bit, you know, it was a bit undercooked, maybe. And the villain is not very good. Like, he's so wooden. And I didn't really understand his motivation in the real world.
He wanted to be the boss of the car company. About it.
Did you get that?
But he was going to steal an iPad.
That wasn't going to happen. So like, this is another thing, is the film has this kind of apparent, like, fondness for technology and mechanics and cars and things, but it kind of falls short of really, really loving them. It's not like watching, like, Mad Max, where it's like, the film is so in love with these cars, or, like, you know, Porco Rosso, where it's like, oh god, you can tell they love these planes. It's just like, they're kind of shown and you're meant to go, oh wow, those are cool. And then it doesn't really go too far beyond that. And I didn't really understand whether I was meant to think whether cars are a bad thing or a good thing or not. It didn't really have a point of view, I don't think, on that. And that kind of bothered me as well. I mean, the other thing I want to say, though, is it's perfectly possible the film just caught me at a bad time. But this is my reaction to what I saw when I saw it. And I really wanted to like it more than I did, but it was just too long.
Well, this is the kind of reaction, like, when we've had a film discussion and it's been one that I haven't liked so much, it's that's generally been sort of my reaction. It hasn't been something, oh, I hate this. It's always been
no,
and they're kind of the hard ones to talk about. I mean, in my case,
because the conversation is like it is now. It's like, well, I liked it. Well, I didn't. Well, good for you and good for me. <That's>... Yeah.
But
no, I hear you.
But I did. One thing did occur to me when I was watching it, the magic tablet thing, and that Kenji Kamiyama made Eden of the East, and that was basically about someone who had the magic cell phone.
Right. Okay. I didn't see Eden of the East.
I mean, it's not literally magic. It's people have got a phone where basically anything they ring up, that happens, they've basically got, like, they can do anything from the phone, pretty much, like they can buy a hotel or whatever, because it's full of, they've got infinite buttons, right, type thing to take part in this competition thing.
Okay, so this is kind of the thing, though, is it's all a little bit too surface for my liking.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine to be interested in the idea of, well, what if a cell phone was literally magic? But it doesn't really go beyond that. It doesn't go beyond, like, that question. It doesn't explore, oh, yeah, but we really are tied to our phones. So even if there was a magic one, like, you know, is the spell really on us? I even someone like that would be more interesting than you know what happened. And the thing is that the magic tablet is in the dream world,
and also
it just seems like quite unimaginative.
And also, it isn't featured that heavily. It's not like it's
the main, like everything in the film. It's struggling to give everything its own space, enough space to really like make an impact. Frankly,
yeah, I can.
It's a bit, yeah, I
can pretty much.
It's a bit too busy.
I can understand your criticisms. I can see why people would feel that.
There was stuff I liked about it, definitely. I mean, I really like stuff that's actually set in the near future.
Yeah.
That was interesting. And also the fact that it was set in the near future that wasn't a total dystopia.
Yeah.
was kind of refreshing. Because the images of Tokyo 2020 that pop into your head aren't always positive ones.
Akira, basically.
well, yeah. yeah, exactly. But I just felt like it was, you know, the attention to detail that they put into, you know, making the ticket machines look exactly like the ticket machines in the stations, they could have put into the story just having a little bit more cohesion. I think when I was watching it, I was also thinking like, oh, this is taking a long time to get going. And it does. It takes about half an hour before the, I guess what you could probably call the inciting incident occurs. And in a 2-hour movie, that's probably slightly too long. I just felt it could have been a bit leaner. And I honestly felt this, like, even just in the shot length. Like, there were some things that were happening, and it was like they took 3 shots to play out and didn't really use that time for any extra, like, acting or real impact. It was just a strange, it was paced weirdly for my liking.
Okay, could I say some things I liked about it?
please do, because I wanna talk about. It sounds like I'm really down on it, and I'm not. It's you're right. What you said before is that basically it's harder to. It would be easier if it was complete dreck, and it's not.
Mm-hmm. I actually like the. I like the dad character. I thought it's kind of unusual to have like a heroic dad in anime. I mean, he's not that heroic, but you know, he's a bit cooler, and
he's a hot dad.
Exactly. And I thought this was kind of reflective maybe of, well, it's written by Kamiyama as well. And I'm thinking he's kind of the guy he identifies with rather than the kids anymore. And I think, I mean,
okay, yeah,
because he seems kind of young to have a daughter of what, 17 or whatever.
I think it's the problem that happens a lot in anime, though, is it's half that thing of like, it's not fan servicey, but the character's more appealing if he's like a slightly older dad.
Mm-hmm. But you don't,
genuinely,
you don't see that often, like with that character. As you just, I mean, in a lot of anime, obviously, there just aren't any parents, because apparently loads of the teenagers just live on their own in Japan, and it's fine. But there are less like positive parent roles, I think. Obviously, you get people like Gendo in get in the gotcha, G.
Yeah.
And you just don't get so many positive parental roles, and I thought that was kind of neat. And you were saying about fan service-y, I also appreciated the fact that, considering like the length of the skirt she's wearing, the fact that, and lots of shots in it where if it was a more teenage aimed anime or whatever, you totally see her underwear and you don't see it at all. I thought that was heroic.
Oh no, one of the nice things about it, definitely, yeah, is the fact that it's actually probably going to work really well for its target audience, you know, teenage girls.
Mm-hmm. And I also wonder, because we watched it subtitled, I wonder if I'm not sure if there is a dubbed version, because
I think there is.
I hope there is, because for it to find like the younger audience that it deserves, really.
Yeah, there is. Brina Palencia is Kokone's character.
Okay. So, right.
And Doug Erholtz is the dad.
Okay.
Apparently he played Squall in Final Fantasy.
Fascinating. I don't know who. Oh no, hang on, isn't that the is that guy with the big gun sword? No. I did remember. So I guess Dan wasn't a big fan of that film, and I enjoyed it. I would describe it as charming. I would think that's the way I would describe it. I know that sounds a bit, I always find that sounds a bit of a damp praise, but I do think it is. So
it's slightly airless. I mean, it's really genuinely, if you're a fan of like, you know, the animation itself, it's a treat. There are lots of lovely drawings that move, but and there are nice elements to a story. I mean, it has a good heart. It's just, like I said, it just didn't move me.
Fair enough. It isn't like a film that's been universally praised or anything, so I mean, even if it was, that wouldn't matter, but
mm-hmm.
But you might still be able to catch it in cinemas if you're interested, at various screenings and at some festivals. I think it might be playing at Scotland Loves Anime if you're out there, in Glasgow or Edinburgh, later in October. And otherwise it will show up on DVD and Blu-ray in a few months' time. So shall we head over to the water cooler, where we discuss other things we've been watching and doing and stuff. Dan, I know that you went on a bit of a trip recently.
Oh, yeah. I had my first holiday in about 6 years. And it was great. And I only had like 8 days, but I went to Japan. And I had an amazing time. I packed a lot in. I caught up with some good friends, and I, being an animation fan, like lost my mind in Japan because, you know, it's everywhere, and it's kind of on, like, the first night I was there, Ponyo was just on TV. I was like, oh, this is great. it was an amazing trip. I was in Tokyo for most of it. But I also went to Hiroshima, which is a beautiful city, and I recommend, going if you have the opportunity, not least for the amazing, Peace Park area, and the museum, which is, as you can imagine, a heavy but profoundly humbling, day.
Mm-hmm.
I did a few animation related things there. One of my favorite things that I did was I went to an incredible a Disney exhibition. And I've never seen this sort of thing happening outside of Burbank, frankly. But it was a complete retrospective of Disney art, concept art, storyboards, key animation frames, production backgrounds, layouts, anything you could imagine related to so much Disney stuff. They had everything pretty much from Steamboat Willie onwards.
Oh wow.
And it was unbelievable. I was very lucky, managed to like go on the last day. And I really hope this thing tours, because it really was an unbelievable treat to see, you know, original work from, Lord of the Shorts, Plain Crazy, Steamboat Willie, but then everything from like production backgrounds from, Fantasia, Bambi, Sleeping Beauty, Pinocchio, everything. They had everything.
Oh, wow.
And lots of, key animation, drawings from like all the Nine Old Men and Glenn Keane and Eric Goldberg and, you know, anyone you could mention, they had artwork, of theirs there. And it was a really, fantastic treat. And, it was obviously like a trip down memory lane, kind of, because, you know, if you've grew up with Disney, it was like, oh yeah, I had these. And if you had, you know, I hadn't thought about Disney movies for such a long time, and it was just a treat, really, to see the stuff in the flesh, and it sort of made it like kind of more real and achievable. It was just very, inspiring, basically.
Awesome.
A beautiful, inspiring day out. And then animation wise, I'm trying to think if there's anything else in between I did that was vaguely animation-y. Probably not. No, I went to the Ghibli Museum as well, which was a lovely, lovely day out. It's in Mitaka, which is sort of western Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set in this lovely like city park area. And it's just sort of kind of as you'd expect. Like you sort of just approach it and you look through a few trees and you go, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's there. Anyway, and I went inside, and of course it's a beautiful, lovely, lovely space. It's designed for you to get lost in. And that's what I did. I just, you know, it's labyrinthine, and it's, like I said, it's designed so you get lost. So you go in what you think is the first floor, but it turns out it's kind of, I think they call it the second basement, no, the first basement. And then you realize there's a level below, and then there's a level above you, and you're like, okay, how do I get to the thing above? And there are all sorts of ways to get there. Like there's certain places you can only reach by stairs, and then like spiral staircases and an elevator. And, I don't know, it was just a great fun space. It's very, as you can probably see from photos, it's very, it sort of feels, inspired by Gaudi and Antoni Gaudi's, work, the guy who's got his stamp on Barcelona. Very sort of like Art Nouveau sort of space. And I saw one of the films that they play there. The one that I saw. So they have 9 films that they have on like a rolling, monthly basis, and just, you don't choose to see whichever film is playing that month is the one that you see. And the one that I saw was called The Day I Harvested a Star. and it, the day I harvest the planet. Anyway, it's sort of like a Miyazaki sci-fi story. Ah. It's a little bit, it's set in the world of Iblard, which, if you're familiar, is the world created by, a particular artist, called, sorry, this is interesting. Inoue Naohisa. And it's sort of the world that is the fantasy world in, Whisper of the Heart.
Oh, right.
And it's also the world that I think the music video On Your Mark, is set in. So it's sort of like if, what if Miyazaki did Blade Runner, basically, which is really interesting. Anyway, it's a charming, lovely film about a kid who he sort of lives in a world where time is sort of rationed. I think it was a shame because, despite there being a lot of English everywhere in Japan, it wasn't subtitled in English, and there was actually a lot of dialogue for a short film. So I didn't really completely get what was happening, but it was beautiful. You got to see Miyazaki's idea of hyperspace, which is wildly colorful and a real hoot. But yeah, if you can't get to the museum, I think watching Iblard, G-Can, or the On Your Mark video is a pretty good approximation of the world. So that was a real treat. And then, one of my favorite things I saw in the museum, actually, which I hadn't heard anyone talk about, it was next to the Totoro zoetrope that they have there. You know, the sort of like, they have these, models on a spinning zoetrope machine, and they have a strobe light which flashes perfectly at 24 frames, 24 times a second. So it appears like these models are animated. Anyway, next to that, there is this beautiful big glass case. And inside this glass case, there are hundreds of moving parts and things spinning and cogs turning and things like that. And it just looks like a mad machine. But then you go closer and you realize that spinning around this mad machine is film. And if you lean down, there are these little windows and they're screens and they're playing this short film. And on each side of the glass box is a different window showing what is the same piece of film at a different point. And it's this beautiful looping film, that was made for the museum. That's like it's like a cartoon evolution story. So it starts off in like primordial soupy waters and just single cell organisms. And then slowly they evolve into fish, but it's like a chase movie. So there's always like this bigger fish chasing this little fish, and then to escape, the little fish sprouts legs and goes onto land and is an amphibian. And then the bigger fish reacts by turning into like a dinosaur. And then the little one turns into a faster dinosaur. And then the big one turns into a T-Rex, and the little one turns into a rodent. And it sort of continues until it gets to this little, primate character, and then the primate character evolves into a caveman, and then the caveman walks up a, but all the time it's like this moving background animation, and the camera is constantly moving. And he climbs up to the top of a mountain, and he meets a girl, and he gives her flowers, and she blushes, and then pop, this little wedding dress appears on her, and they kiss, and then the film starts over again, and it was just absolutely delightful. unfortunately, one of the main things about the museum, which I always used to complain about, and probably still would, is the fact that you can't really take mm-hmm. pictures. And part of it is copyright, but then the other part of it is based on just the museum's wishes that, you know, you actually experience the place rather than taking pictures the whole time, which is, you know, fair enough, really. There are places where you can take pictures. You can take pictures with the robot from Laputa on the roof. So, you know, it's not a dictatorship, but yeah. So, I went there and it was lovely. It was a real, and they had an exhibition while I was there that was on, all about Ghibli food. And the one of the loveliest things for me about the museum was the fact that they are so proud of how animation is made. That even in this museum exhibit about food, there was just a whole wall dedicated to keyframes, of someone chewing. And it sort of, and it had all the layers of like the highlights of the food that they were eating. It was Chihiro's dad eating, the start of Spirited Away. And at every corner in the museum, they're just immensely proud of animation and how it's made. And they're so excited about it and they want you to be excited about it. And it was easy enough for me, but it was seeing people discover things and seeing people, you know, peer into little corners and go, oh, that's what a storyboard is. And, you know, just little things like that. And it did mean a lot to me. And I'm really glad that I did it. And, yeah, I don't know. There's not much else for me to say, really, other than I feel like I've got to go back and at least 9 more times.
Watch all the other films.
So I can watch all the other films.
But then they're adding Goro as well.
No.
10 times?
Oh, I guess, yeah. Maybe there might be more than 9. Maybe there might be like 12 now. But anyway, it was a fantastic treat. And again, like the Disney exhibit, just immensely inspiring as an animator, and motivating as well, to want to do, not just to do better, but to also just get to the essence of like what it is that's exciting about animation and how it moves people and, how the mechanics of it in itself can be beautiful. Anyway, I'm not going to go on much more about that. But yeah, I thoroughly recommend if you ever have the opportunity to go. It is a little bit tricky to get tickets. You have to book in advance quite far. And it's sort of, tricky to do that. It's easy once you're in Japan to buy tickets. You can buy them at like, there's a convenience store there called Lawson, and you can buy tickets quite easily from Lawson. They have machines there where you can buy. So yeah, that's the only tricky part. I was a bit last minute and was kind of lucky. So don't do what I did. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to talk about. Oh, I saw the Lego Ninjago movie yesterday, and I really enjoyed it. It was a really fun Lego movie. I think, you know, the Lego movies now, like, are sort of their own, like I said to you earlier, Chris off air, like, their own sort of seal of approval. Like, you sort of know what you're going to get, and that's a good thing, because they're actually still really creative, and they're really good at making surprising films which challenge them and, you know, work for kids and adults. And I don't know, I enjoyed it. It's unfortunately not quite as good as the Lego Batman movie, which in turn is not quite as good as the Lego movie. But that they're still very, very good. And I recommend if you liked those movies, checking this one out because it's really funny.
I saw when I watched Storks on the Blu-ray, it had a short Lego Ninjago short, to introduce the movie.
Oh, cool.
Featuring the master character and, a chicken. And it was very funny. So, you might want to check out that short if you can find it somewhere. I think in some places it played before the Lego Batman movie, actually.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I think I heard that somewhere.
I've got to watch that one again. I love that movie.
I haven't seen it yet. Shockingly. Yeah. I know something we both have watched, and that is a little show by the name of Rick and Morty, season 3.
A little show that's also the biggest show in the US. It's literally the biggest. I think it's like the biggest comedy in the US right now.
Yeah.
It's literally huge. It's the biggest show. We're talking about Rick and Morty, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Which is kind of crazy where it came from. It's just this little show on Adult Swim, and suddenly it's one of the biggest shows in the world. And it's been a long awaited, but how have you felt about season 3?
I really like season 3. I think I liked it better than season 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did. I think I felt it was more consistent. And it did something which was, I thought, really impressive. One of my fears with Rick and Morty was the fact that it was going to become either one of two things, and this sounds like really fussy. It would either become Monster of the Week, and it would sort of exist in stasis, or it would be too serialized.
Yeah.
And I think they know their characters. They do the work. The writers, this is enough that they know the characters so well that they can literally do anything with them. And I really love that about the show. And one of my favorite things about the season is that they weren't afraid to explore anything in a character.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it still feels like it could sustain at least a few more seasons. I thought it told an interesting story this year. How did you feel about it?
I really liked it, obviously. But I don't know that at the moment I would put it like ahead of season 2. I think maybe it has some of the best episodes overall of the series. But maybe not the whole consistent thing. Maybe didn't work quite as well to me as season 2. Not saying in any way that it's bad it's degrees of greatness, basically. It's like, oh, this is only 98 great rather than 100 great, whatever. You know, it's still very, very good.
Yeah. I think I want to say like it's not I was a little worried at the start of the season that they were going, okay, we know what Rick and Morty is. We've cracked it. This is what it is. Because one of the interesting things I think about Rick and Morty is that it does allow itself to evolve. It does allow itself to be a different show. I mean, the episodes that it was doing in the first season are quite different to what it's doing now. because of how well the audience knows its characters and because of the ground that it's already set up to build upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just...
Do you have a favourite episode this season?
Well, it's predictable, really.
Is it?
Is Pickle Rick? Isn't that everyone's favourite?
Pickle Rick.
Kind of, yeah.
I liked Pickle Rick a lot. I really liked the ABCs of Beth. Oh, no, sorry. I really liked the ABCs. I did like the ABCs of Beth.
That's the penultimate.
I really liked Morty's Mind Blowers. Yeah. And the Ricklantis mix-up.
Yeah.
The Ricklantis mix-up. The Ricklantis mix-up. The one where it was the world of the Citadel of Ricks.
Yeah, I thought...
And...
First I thought that was the replacement for the interdimensional cable. And then the next one was the Maltese Mind Blowers, and then they said, "This is what we're doing instead of interdimensional cable." This, you know, they call it out in the show,
right? Yeah,
so that people don't think, "No, there's actually still going to be an interdimensional cable," which they know that people will be thinking if they don't actually say it.
Well, so I think that's actually for me indicative of how they're still challenging themselves. Like they had 10 episodes this season and they went, let's not do that again. Let's not repeat ourselves again. Let's not try and have lightning strike, you know, let's not try and force anything. Yeah. That's not what we're up to at the moment. And I like that a lot. Pickle Rick shows that they're still really good at doing good standalone stories about the characters. But I thought it was a pretty, there was a point at which there was a dip. I don't know if the second episode, or if Vindicators 3 are stellar.
Mm-hmm.
They might be, saying the worst doesn't make any sense.
No.
But they're probably the least good episodes.
Yeah.
Of Rick and Morty, I think, that I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
I still really, really like the show. And it surprises me. The main thing is that it surprises me still a lot.
Yeah.
The storytelling is great. And it's still really funny.
It definitely very much is, yes. And yeah, just all the
I do want to say something though about it, which I'm gonna try and not spend too long on. It's just the nature of fandom lately is really bugging me.
Yeah.
And I know that fandom means a lot to a lot of people, and I'm not going to take that away from anyone. I just want to say for myself, though, I really am quite tired of this idea that just because you like something, it means you belong in a club.
Yeah.
Especially with something which is literally the biggest show, on US TV, or the biggest comedy. At least you don't need to belong in a club. You don't need to belong to that club. So you being a fan of something doesn't make you special.
No.
It might make you special when it's like, you know, an obscure comic artist that you're supporting and that's kind of cool. But, you know, literally liking the biggest cartoon in the world at the moment, in the US at the moment, it doesn't make you special. And you don't have to, like, delineate yourself as, like, a fan in that fandom. And it's just all a bit icky to me. I really don't get why... And because the trouble with fandoms is well, like, they generate a name for themselves. And, like, on this weekend on Twitter, because for anyone listening, you know, this past weekend there was a McDonald's, I can't even be bothered. There was a McDonald's promotion for the Mulan dipping sauce. There was like a limited run, and a few people were disappointed because it was a very, very limited run. And they've since sort of like, you know, gained a reputation of Rick and Morty fans being
dicks.
These sort of dicks, self-entitled man babies. Which I'm sure many of them are. But it's just sort of turned my Twitter feed into this thing where it's like, is now fashionable to bash on Rick and Morty because of a few shithead fans.
Yeah.
And I just really question the idea of like, what fuck a fandom is. If you're going to let your enjoyment of something be tarnished by a toxic fan base. Like, I don't know. I think I'm too old for all of that. I just don't get it, man. What's going on? Why do you, it's just weird. Like, why you're liking a thing means so much to people.
But didn't you know that, only really intelligent people like Rick and Morty? That's the cliche of the Rick and Morty hardcore fan bases, that, oh no, it's just really smart, you see, it's like the most intelligent show. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, it is very, it's very mm-hmm. cleverly written and everything.
It's very clever.
But you're not, you know, you're not Stephen Hawking.
A genius. Yeah, just because you've read A Brief History of Time doesn't mean, say, you're as brilliant as Einstein.
Yeah.
And
also there's also been the whole thing of some of the fans going after some of the women who wrote on it, saying, oh, you've ruined it. And obviously those people suck.
I gotta say, Dan Harmon's response to that was really heartwarming. The fact that he said, you idiots, we all write it. And, you know, the person who's called the writer is just the one who basically does the grunt work of writing up the script.
So you're saying we're all rubbish, is what you're saying. If you think that was rubbish.
Yeah. And I think the most interesting thing I saw about it was I saw a tweet where someone said something along the lines of, possibly what happened is Rick and Morty is a show with very toxic characters at the center, and people with toxic personalities might watch the show and think, wow, these people sure are interesting because they think that's sort of a substitute for having a personality. And I think there might be something in that. You know, the fact that, you know, it's the Breaking Bad problem of like, you're actually rooting for Walter White. That's probably, okay, you can't engage with something beyond the level of, boy, I hope James Bond gets the girl and defeats the, you know what I mean? It's, you can love them for characters and you don't have to, literally, support their personalities, and I don't know. I think what I'm getting at is the sort of thing that I see, frankly, a lot of the time on Tumblr, is the sort of infantilization of drama as being like, you know, people being unable to tell the difference between, you know, something that's dramatic and an exploration of personality versus actually being a good person in the world. And the two don't have to align. You know, I'm allowed to enjoy immensely watching The Wolf of Wall Street but still think that the behavior in the film is despicable. But dramatically, it's very interesting. I don't support that behavior.
Do you know what this makes me think of? Like comedy characters, like the pub landlord and...
Gaining a fan base that maybe, doesn't get the joke.
Maybe L.E.G.
Yeah,
where it's like a parody of Little England as like UKIP voter type idiot, and people watching it and going, oh yeah, he's right on when he's having a go at the French. Like, no, you don't get it. He's making fun of you if you think like that.
Possibly. Yeah, that's very likely. Yeah, that's very likely. But, you know, I think when you have something which is literally the biggest show in the US, you're going to have a few shithead fans. And it's just sort of, I don't really know what to say. It kind of becomes a moot point when something is that big. It's like someone having an opinion about The Simpsons now. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Anyway, weird little rant over. I like Rick and Morty, and I genuinely love the characters. I don't think they are stellar examples of humans.
No, I think if you watch it and you think, oh, I really identify with Rick, then you're probably someone
you don't get
who should be avoided in most places.
And
yeah,
you can't be helped. Have you by any chance seen Big Mouth on Netflix?
No, I haven't watched it. Yeah. I've seen the trailer I was not looking forward to it, but I have heard some good things from some people. So hey, I must try it, obviously, because it's just there. It's on Netflix. There's no reason not to try these things on Netflix, basically.
I watched the first episode, and for mm-hmm. the first episode, it was pretty good.
Ah, right.
It's definitely, that's the thing. It's using Netflix, the fact that it isn't the FCC, to its full extent. Lots of
mm-hmm.
it's a very the word I've seen
Effin and Jeffin
part one and part two. They the word that I've seen used a lot about it, which I think is very telling and is quite an accurate description, is that it's literally cathartic. It's all about puberty. And it follows these kids through every awkward situation you could possibly imagine that occurs during puberty. But it really is like a therapy session. and it kind of, in the most entertaining sense, like it's cathartic. It's exploring awkward areas. The animation style isn't my favorite. Design wise, it's not the most fun to look at. It's actually, the acting's pretty good and it's directed fine. And technically it's all up to scratch, but it doesn't really, you know, like most American, like animated shows, it seems to think that it has to be a bit ugly.
I wonder if, like, adult animated shows feel like I need to be ugly so I don't look like I'm a kid's show or I will appeal to children.
I feel
something.
Like we've spoken about this before. And do you know what? I think there might be something in it. I think there might be something in the fact that, nice things. You're an adult now, you have to deal with ugly weirdness. There was a thing, or there was a moment I saw recommended on Twitter recently and it was like a woman had like picked up a book for her grandchild in a bookshop.
Oh.
Did you see that? And it was like an animal thing.
Animals who can talk.
Animals who can talk, and they said the darndest four-letter wordiest things. And I don't know. It was just like, well, if you used your eyes and flicked through the book, you'd probably see, yeah, that was. But people are entitled, and they have these ideas, and maybe you're right. Maybe you're right about that. I feel like you have to sort of do it in reverse. So I noticed Rick and Morty recently, particularly actually the episode of Pickle Rick, was pretty stunning to watch and is a far cry from its sort of, you know, notebook sketching beginnings. But yeah, maybe there's something in that.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Who knows? But I'm going to keep watching Big Mouth and see how it goes, because it's got a lot of voice actors, are comedians that I really like. Nick Kroll and Maya Rudolph and Jason Mantzoukas and John Mulaney. So that alone is pretty good.
Yeah, well, Rick and Morty's finished now, so I need something. So I will. Oh, and there's, I also need to keep on with BoJack Season 4. I've started that, obviously.
Is it super sad still? Is it lightened up at all?
Not a lot so far, no. yeah, well, I'm not really going to give my opinion on that till I've finished it, so.
Cool.
Okay.
And we'll probably unpack Rick and Morty with everyone else on the podcast at a later date, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll do that. Oh, and I was thinking probably now the series is finished and it's going to be God knows how long before we get a new series, it might be worth checking out the comics because they are supposedly pretty good.
All right.
From what I've heard, we've got some good people involved. So have you read any?
I actually have not.
I thought you had. I'm thinking of something else. I can't remember what it is.
Do you know what? I might have done. Who knows?
Yeah. Anyway, I think that will about do us for this evening. It's been a good conversation, even though we've had some slight technical hiccups with our new recording method.
They don't know that.
I know. And I'll probably edit that bit out, but...
Apart from the hairpin turn that the news took at a certain point.
Yes. Anyway, we'll just have to see if we can eye it out, or whether this is no good either. We shall find out. Anyway, we will catch you soon for some more animation related chat, where more of us should be back and joining in. And if you want to keep up with everything we're doing, you can find all our previous episodes on iTunes, on podcast.com, and on Stitcher, and of course on animativeadults.com under the podcast tab. You can follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Tumblr, on Pinterest, on Google+, even. I mean, as much good that does for all those Google employees. On Google+, and a couple of other people. And if you would like to support us, you can find us on patreon.com/animationforadults. You can find us on patreon.com. You can find us on Ko-fi if you'd like to buy us a virtual coffee, or you can send us a donation, as some kind people have done. And you can find that on PayPal. .me/AFAblog, and you can follow us on Twitter @AFAblog. Where can we find you, Dan?
You can find me as always on Twitter @Hamu.
Okay, and you can find me on Twitter and Facebook @MrChristor. Okay, so we will be back very soon. So good night, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Mr. Poopy Butthole.
We gotta keep an eye out for any zany, wacky characters that pop up.
Ooh-wee, whatever you want.